Greetings. This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and we are Building Bridges. Todd Miller, author of Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to the World Without Borders, discusses the U.S. as the policeman for the corporate world, creating borders to clear the landscape for those for whom borders don't exist. That is, the 1%. While children, women, and men seeking asylum get shredded on razor wire or drowned by barriers placed across the Rio Grande by agents of the state. Well, Todd Miller, thank you for being with us. Let's begin by cutting through the facile media myths and escape the paralyzing constraints of political debate that functions mainly to obscure the unconscionable inequities that borders everywhere need to exist and be secure. So can you take us to the 1%? So the 1% don't have borders, but those they exploit and destroy the livelihoods, they sure do. So how are we to understand now the politics of borders?
Yeah, Mimi and Ken, thank you so much for having me back here with you. It's really a pleasure to be with you again. And yeah, that's a good place to begin. I mean, when you think about borders, or we can just think about how it's framed so often in the national press. Like, if you were to talk about open borders, for example, the idea of open borders, which comes up from time to time, but it's a very stigmatized subject, as we know. So oftentimes it's shot down by many different, by both sides of the aisle, if you want to look at it that way. But when we think about open borders, the immediate presumption is that we're talking about people arriving to the U.S. southern border, and usually people who are dispossessed or people who are on the move for various reasons, people who are in different states of, you know, needing to move for different reasons, and from livelihood to threats on their lives. And what is not presented with open borders is what does actually have open borders. And for example, as Ken put it at the very beginning, you know, the corporate world doesn't have open borders. In fact, you can look through a series of free trade agreements, and you can look at free trade agreements such as the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, or CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement, or the number of different other trade agreements throughout the world. And instead of calling them free trade agreements, which is a brilliant language, right? So you think it's great. You could think of it as an open border system for the corporate world. And what does that mean? It means that, like, big companies can cross the border, like, say, from the United States into Mexico, or United States into Central America. They don't have to go through a border wall. They don't have to face border agents. They don't have to evade people and go out deep into the desert and die at alarming rates. They can go and just take over land. If anyone follows mining companies, for example, in Latin America, you'll see that mining companies are getting concessions left and right throughout the whole Western Hemisphere, Mexico, Central America, and the South America, and the Caribbean, and taking over land. And often, you know, it depends on the mine, it depends on the community, but often taking over whole communities too. And there's many cases of water sources being poisoned because mines use so much water. And then mines also use cyanide, you know, to get the precious metals from the soil, and other poisonous fluids, right? So that gets into the water supply, poisons the water supply. And then the end result is that people end up not being able to live in the places where they were living. And yet, when we think of open borders, when we think of the border, we're not thinking of these companies. We're not thinking these companies do not face the wrath of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, right? That you see working as almost an extension of the U.S. border, working in the interior, going to rounding people up in different places and imprisoning people and then deporting them. The mines aren't, that's not happening to the mines. They set up shop and then they're actually protected by police. So that's kind of what I mean with the way that we're almost conditioned to look at borders is through this lens of national sovereignty. Like we need these big borders to protect the United States and it's whatever the United States, like as a border patrol, our way of life, quote unquote. And then, but when you start really looking at what borders are doing and who borders are for and what they're for and why people are being displaced and who can move and who can't move, a whole new set of questions start to arise. And those questions, I do believe, are very important ones to contemplate.
Well, let's tackle those questions specifically. But I do want to ask you, I almost think that I should advise all of our listeners to start heeding Wilhelm Reich's going back to really the psychology of fascism, how it takes hold, how it arises. And what I'm looking at specifically is the issue of a nation of immigrants. What is it? What is it? What is the narrative that is so easily ginned up by those seeking power and bought by the populace? And I'm not even talking about the impoverished populace or the working class per se, but certainly the liberals as well, that there is something inherently destructive about immigrants coming in and that its effect is terrifying for our communities, whether they gin up the issue and artificial of crime, or they then have people who will say, yes, but I waited dutifully in line to become, to seek asylum. They're not. This does hurt the process, the rule of law, and so on. So how do you understand what's being sprouted that has affected, as I said, the liberal community, the Democrats, not just the Republicans, to be so antagonistic to the immigrant populations that seek to live and seek to live by virtue of mostly the destruction of their own country's economy and climate by the policies of the First World?
Yeah, I think the last thing you just said is pretty much... Well, I don't know, but my guess, if I'm to look at it, if I'm to surmise why so many people buy this idea that immigrants are destructive, hook, line, and sinker, people, and repeat it in different ways, and you can repeat that concept in a way like Donald Trump, for example, which is bombastic. It's like it's said loudly and with many, you know, different words, you know, very descriptive words, right? Often in racist terms, or you could say it in a way that sounds more quote unquote humane. I'll use that word because the Biden administration uses that word quite a bit when they talk about their border and immigration policy, that it's humane. But at the same time, they're both really agreeing on the same premise, right? And one of the premises is that immigration is destructive. It's interesting when I was looking back at the Donald Trump years and looking at what some of the Democrats are saying, it was almost unanimous that they were against the wall, right? And prominent Democrats, they were against this wall building project of Donald Trump. Yet so often they would say, but we are for border security. But without defining what border security is, like, what is that you mean by border security, right? Like that. So the idea of enforcing the border, even violently, which can be done like with an armed border patrol or the kind of virtual technology wall that's in place, that's really promoted by the Democrats. The problematic was the wall. But when we enforce it another way, then it's fine, and we're based on the same premise that people are coming over and they are going to be destructive. They're going to steal jobs. They're going to cause crime. They're going to, you know, whatever, these kind of mythologies. And I think the thing that I immediately think of when I see that, when I see this in process, is really what you mentioned towards the end, like this non-mentioning of U.S. foreign policy, the evasion of saying, well, if you look at U.S., the history of U.S. economic policy in places like Latin America or the Caribbean, you will see its destructive nature upon economies, especially towards the poor in many countries. And you'll see, and those sorts of systemic realities are not mentioned. So it almost seems like instead of really facing the music of what is really happening in the world and how big a part U.S. foreign policy plays into it, and I would include in U.S. foreign policy as the top historic greenhouse gas emitter, the climate crisis that we're facing and how much of the impact that's having on more and more people and why they are leaving the places where they live. With not mentioning that stuff and just placing the blame on the person crossing the border and the potential destruction of that person, it's a total distraction from what really is happening and the issues that we really need to tackle. But if we are to tackle those issues, then we have to seriously contemplate and, if not, undermine U.S. power in the world.
Now, I'd like to get into some specifics with regard to the Biden administration, because he's trying to make some changes from the Trump administration, Title 42, which Trump had forecasted is ending. And Biden has made some changes, but there's been opposition also in court. Now, if you could talk about what Biden is trying to get.
Well, Biden, so right from the start, and you came in 2020, he said quite adamantly that he was going to come in and completely different than Donald Trump. He said that he would not build one more foot of wall. He said that he was going to remove, Remain in Mexico, the policy of people who are awaiting asylum claims to stay on the Mexican side of the border while they await their court hearing. He said he was going to stop Title 42, which is, of course, a pandemic era policy that would give rapid expulsions to people crossing the border, including asylum seekers. So people couldn't ask for asylum after crossing the border. They would get deported back into usually Mexico. And so those sorts of, like, he was very, very in his executive orders. He did talk quite a bit about all this stuff, but you have to now, close to three years into this? We have to start looking at what has actually been done and what hasn't been done. And that when you, like, for example, the Title 42 policy, well, that it took until May. It was May. It was just two months ago in May that was finally phased out. And that was against the will of the Biden administration. A court actually ordered them to stop Title 42. They ordered them to stop Title 42 in 2022, and then the Biden administration said, no, we can't do that yet. So they asked for an extension. They got it until May. And then in May, they pretty much said, don't worry. And I guess they're speaking to the mass media that was fanning the flames of this idea that if Title 42 was phased out, then people would just quote unquote flood over the border, right? And so they responded to that, like saying, absolutely, that's not going to happen. Okay, Title 42 is phasing out, but we are going to then use our Title 8 authority to prosecute people to then, you know, it really went back to pre-Title 42, which wasn't any walk in the park, right? People were getting prosecuted, thrown in jail, deported. With the deportations, which could be even considered worse than Title 42, is that people would get 5-year bans from coming into the United States. This has been reinstated. So if they get caught again, they get thrown in prison for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, 180 days. through a whole system that they have of prosecuting people as a deterrence policy. And so this whole system, the border system, including the wall building, the publication I write for, the Border Chronicle, we just put out a piece last week with an expert on the border wall from Texas, and he went on about how they're continue to build the border wall. So it's not quite like what Trump was doing, but the border wall is still what the Biden administration is saying they're filling in the gaps. And when they said they wouldn't build one more foot of border wall, which hasn't been true, actually, they also said, instead of saying, I remember reading that line and thinking, oh, what are they going to say? Are they going to say, well, we're going to spend that money in a way that might improve humanity, you know, the well-being of humanity or something like that? And absolutely, they did not say that. The next clause was, instead of building a border wall, we're going to bring in more technology. And so since that point, they have tried to use this narrative that they're creating this quote unquote humane border by using technology. But the technology is a series of invasive surveillance towers that have high sophisticated capabilities, like surveillance towers that can see 8 miles away, that can see at night, that are connected with a drone system that does overflights, that is connected to command and control centers. If this sounds like a war zone, it kind of is like that. It's been developed to be a war zone, the borderlands, connected to a command and control center and a series of underground motion sensors. And most recently, and this I think is a very symbolic of the Biden administration, is the purchase of the robotic dogs, which people I think have heard about in New York City. The NYPD, I think, has began to use these robo dogs. Well, they were the border on CBP, bought two of them a couple years ago and has been testing them out and possibly will be using them on the border. And what I think they're attempting to roboticize the border patrol. So bring in like robotic, you know, they already have a lot of flying drones, unmanned aerial vehicles, as they call them. And now they're thinking of UGVs, which are unmanned ground vehicles, which could replace border patrol with robots in a sense. So these are the trends that I see under a Biden administration under a kind of an auspice of, oh, we're doing this more humanely without the bombastic overtures of a Trump, but with a budget that's even much higher than Trump and with the same sort of enforcement goals.
So, Todd, are you suggesting or saying overtly that on one hand you have in Texas the policy of using more explicitly razor wire stretched across the Rio Grande as well as attached to the walls and in other venues, and you also have buoys that have been placed in the deeper parts of the water and oftentimes are underground so that people can't see them. And people have gotten sneered in this razor wire bales that are located in the Rio Grande and so on. So there's the low-tech, vicious cruelty shredding people's lives. And then there are the Democrats whose policies are essentially the same in terms of their material policies, their exploitative policies, their hegemonist interest and imperialism in the world, but they're more into high tech, the kinder and gentler way of preventing legitimate asylum seekers. Is that where we're at? Is it two wings of the same bird, so to speak?
Yeah, I would say that's a good metaphor, two wings of the same bird. And it's worth mentioning that the razor wire, and a lot of razor wire was put on during the Trump years, and the, you know, along the Rio Grande, and then also what you're referring to, the floating barrier, which has razors right in within it too, like these wrecking ball sized buoys that are put on. Right now, they're in Eagle Pass. Right now, we're under a Biden administration that hasn't removed the razor wire, right? It hasn't. So we have, I would suggest, yeah, it's definitely that. It's kind of the two-headed monster in a certain way, where all the stuff like with the Trump administration, or in this case in Texas right now, it's Operation Lone Star. So a lot of it's coming from Greg Abbott, the Republican governor of Texas. But at the same time, the U.S. federal government has jurisdiction over the border. They could take away anything that the state of Texas puts on the border. So they're allowing it to happen. And so, you have a system that's, you know, you have different rhetoric. You have kinder rhetoric coming from the Democrats. You have harsher rhetoric. And I think this is going to be more accentuated during the upcoming year, especially as an election year. You're going to hear a lot of this rhetoric that makes them seem like they're on opposite sides of the poll, of opposite polls. But I would say, don't be fooled, right? Do not be fooled. One of the dangers of being fooled, and I think this is what's happened, is that during Trump, Trump got tons of media attention, a ton of media attention. And then all of a sudden he's out, Biden's in, Biden says, oh, we're going to have a humane border. And the media coverage, not completely, but mostly disappears. And then there's nothing going on the border. Meanwhile, the high-tech stuff, you know, gets the border wall keeps being built. They have the highest budget ever. If you look at Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, this year in 2023, it's $29.8 billion. And to give you a scope of that, that's higher than Trump ever had. That's way higher. Trump started around $20 billion, ended his 4 years at $24-25 billion. And Biden started around $25 billion. And now all of a sudden he's at $29.8 billion, almost $30 billion. So he's increasing the money that's going. And I should say, it's really important to look at the money versus the rhetoric. The money tells the real story. The rhetoric, you know, you have to read between the lines. What Biden is saying is that he's putting tons of money, the most ever by any president ever, into the border. And on top of that, he's the highest contractor as far as private companies, bringing private companies into it, which brings in a whole other element, like an industrial complex, which we could also talk about. But the thing is, you know, what I think it goes hand in hand with what you just said, Mimi.
Well, you know, going hand in hand, one of the things that I've also learned from your books and so on, which I encourage people, indeed, we must read and prepare ourselves for the discussions that are going to happen and the discussions that haven't been. These boundaries have effectively not only expanded in around the Rio Grande and so on, but they are expanded thousands of miles outside of U.S. territory to encircle not simply American land, but Washington's interests. And I think that is so strategic that we learned that from you and the resources, training, and agents from the U.S. that infiltrate the Caribbean and Central America. They reach across the Canadian border. They go even farther afield, enforcing division between global South and North. Well, in the 2 minutes that we have left, what is the discussion that we have to have? And while people learn more from your books.
Oh, I seriously think that when you look at the border, so many words are just said without thought, like border security, right? If you say border security, everyone agrees. If you're in Washington, I should say, everyone just nods their head because they think they have to. But it's time to start unpacking what that is. What does that really mean? What does that mean money-wise? What does that mean enforcement-wise? How does it impact people? How does it affect people? Does it kill people? Is it violent? Is it viciously violent? How much is detention and imprisonment of people? How much is it expanding around the world? Like really, really honestly looking at what this is. I think if people actually unpacked what this border thing is, use that word security and said, is it really border security? Or is it like, as we said in the first bit, really just protecting the 1%, right?
And we have about really 20 seconds left.
Yeah, so I think if you have a holistic conversation about that, and you compare it to other things that we put money in our budgets to, people would definitely change the narrative and things might start to shift.
Todd Miller's latest book is Build Bridges, Not Walls, A Journey to a World Without Borders. We'll continue this discussion. There's so much more to talk about as we live in this terribly oppressive circumstances and against our siblings from other places whose livelihoods we have destroyed and are coming here to live. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we are building bridges. Thanks for listening.